listening to Football in Europe, the weekly podcast covering the game across the continent.
I'm Rob Daly. Thanks for downloading the show. This week, French football journalist Jonathan Johnson joins us to talk Marseille PSG and the game known as Le Classique.
It has been made more important over the years because of what happens off the pitch between the two sets of fans. You know, there really is now bad blood there between the two sets of supporters.
We attempt to explain why China's investing so much money in European-based players as the likes of Jackson Martinez, Ramirez and Alex Teixeira all head to Asia. The pressure continues to build on Gary Neville. Valencia lose again. Plus, we tell you about the greatest Irish manager you've probably never heard of, a title winner with FC Barcelona.
He's the greatest Irish club football manager there has ever been. There's not been any other Irishman ever involved at Barcelona Football Club, never mind winning a La Liga title.
Meanwhile, Bayern and Dortmund drop points in the Bundesliga. Plus, we preview a meeting of Italy's top two in the Serie A title race.
This is Football in Europe.
Hello and welcome to the show. Alongside me, as always, Chris Parrott.
Yeah, in a storm. Yeah. Sounds a bit like your building's about to blow over.
It does, doesn't it? London's under the cosh at the moment. Last week, if you were listening, we're giving away a copy of the book Eibar the Brave. We had Ewan McTeer on the show last week, and he's the author of that book. You entered in your droves on Twitter. I think we had well over 100 entries, maybe like 200 people enter.
Most retweeted thing ever.
So, Chris, we did select a winner at random. Who got the prize?
It was Eamon Kelly from Sligo in Ireland.
Oh, he lives in Ireland?
He lives in Ireland.
Ah, so Ewan's going to have to post that to Ireland now.
Yeah, the postage and packaging. But yes, well done, Eamon.
Congratulations, and we'll try and have another competition for people soon. Chris, let's move on. We've got lots to get through this week, as I mentioned in the intro there, but we wanted to start the show this week about the talking about the exodus of players to China, and in particular for big sums of money. I just want to go through some of the players who have left in recent weeks, and the transfer window is still open for Chinese Super League teams. Alex Teixeira was one of the big ones. He went to Jiangsu for £38 million. Jackson Martinez was one of the big ones last week to Guangzhou. Evergrande for £31 million. Ramirez, Jovinho, Asamoah Gyan, Paulinho. I think that was last summer, wasn't it, Paulinho from Spurs. Demba Ba and Tim Cahill has gone to Shanghai as well. And I think they're saying Ezekiel Lavezzi, record this, he's leaving Paris Saint-Germain for a club in China. So what are your thoughts on that sudden shift in trend in transfers?
Surprised with the suddenness. I mean, it sort of began, didn't it, a few years ago when Anelka and Drogba went to China, but really exploded just in the last couple of weeks. On the face of it, surprise. And then you think, well, is it any different to any other business? You know,
how so?
China, you know, obviously it's a country of 1.4 billion people. It has huge power in terms of, you know, you think of all of the aspects of life and business where China rules now. In a way, if you just look at it from that level, and I sometimes think that sport people don't quite realise it is essentially just a business, it's not that surprising.
But this is a big shift. We've seen Anelka, and we've seen, I mean, Demba Ba went earlier than this transfer window. But this, you can't ignore the fact these are big moves.
Yeah, they are. And I think it's all because the Chinese government sees now football as an opportunity to put China on the global map. And they've invested a lot of money, and a lot of articles, really good ones, have been written about how important it is that big business supports government ideas in China. And therefore, things which are perceived to be in the national interest, they'll get behind. Partly due to that, there's a huge new TV deal. I think it's 30 times the amount of money from the last one. So that's given clubs more money to spend. Some of the names, I think that's the big thing. And Teixeira, in his prime, has gone there, as opposed to maybe MLS. When that really exploded, they were getting players at the end of their career. These are here and now. Jackson Martinez didn't work at Atletico, but still, they are in the prime of their careers and they're choosing to go to China instead of a host of European clubs.
Yeah, saw this. This was a good tweet. Andy Brassel picking out a tweet from a journalist from Dan Petrescu, who's the manager of Jiangsu, who have signed Teixeira for £38 million. Petrescu said, "I think we paid too much. We could have bought more players with that money." And as Andy correctly mentioned, stay on message, Dan Petrescu.
Yeah, absolutely.
We asked people for their tweets in on this subject anyway. And Mason says, They'll all be back in European football in a season's time. A quick money-making method. So Mason seems to think this might be a bit of a fad or a phase.
Well, that seems to be the key question. How long will it go on for? I think a lot of that is probably down to the Chinese economy. Some of the names that are there, Petrescu, Luis Felipe Scolari, it's nowhere near the level of European football leagues, but I think Guangzhou have won the AFC Champions League twice in the last 3 years. So in terms of that region, it has been a Chinese club which has dominated. So I don't know. What do you think? If players had have gone to Japan and South Korea, people would still be disappointed, I think.
I think we don't see China as a footballing nation.
No, we don't.
Because historically, I mean, what have they made? One World Cup, I think, in 2002 or something like that. And I think that's why perhaps it's a touch more startling. I did message my friend who lives in Shanghai and I said, look, Elliot, if people... I won't use his full name, actually, because you don't want the Chinese government on you.
Oh, yeah, good point, yeah.
I'll just use his nickname from school. Well, his nickname at school was Dragon.
Really? Why?
I think we found out he had a Welsh granddad. From Welsh, we got to the Welsh flag.
Okay.
Dragon.
Well, it's interesting he's gone to China.
Dragon, yeah.
Given that as well.
Yeah, and he was saying some interesting things. He says, I was like, what's been the coverage like of these big money deals? And he says there has not been much coverage of it in the press, even in Shanghai, which is certainly more Western than in Beijing, where he used to live. And he also says currently there's a huge exodus of money out of China, and there's a fear that there's going to be a crash. He says it's around 10 yuan to the pound, but they say it might be worth only 6. And he says there's this big rush to get money out of China at the moment in housing, overseas investment, and especially in the United States. So I wonder if all this money coming out of the country, whether that has some role as well. Who knows? People cleverer than us might be able to work that out. Okay, so we might talk about that more next week anyway, but we'll certainly keep an eye on how Jack Sherratt and Martinez get on, because I'd love to see them back in Europe.
Yeah. I was going to say, by next week, there may well be like 10 more players that have gone. So.
There was something we didn't discuss, the crowds. You said the crowd numbers are actually pretty impressive.
Yeah, they are. Guangzhou, 46,000 average attendance last season. Jiangsu, which is where Teixeira's gone, 27,000. So, I mean, you compare that to every major European league, frankly, 46,000 would be well up there in the Premier League, let alone in La Liga or Serie A. So there's clearly the interest. It's disappointing that we're not going to see Teixeira come to the Premier League. I don't know. I think in modern football, I'm more annoyed with the clubs like Chelsea and Liverpool. He basically said, I probably would have gone, but the offer wasn't that concrete.
But he's not worth that money. Isn't that what it comes down to? 38 million quid.
But how do we know?
I don't know.
That's a whole different thing, because for Liverpool Football Club's point of view, I don't know. Is he worth £38 million? Probably not. But would he improve Liverpool's massively? Yeah. So maybe to Liverpool he is. I mean, that was the argument with Martial when he went to United.
That's very true. Okay, don't forget to subscribe and to review the podcast on iTunes. Much like get the names that reviewed us on iTunes this week, Chris. Billy Big Boy 2456.
Because they're 24455. Yeah, exactly.
And TJP Robert did too. So thanks a lot for that, guys. And if you are enjoying the show while listening right now, please tweet about us and tell everyone using FIE Podcast. Okay, Chris, get your Gary Neville head on, because we're going to be talking about him very shortly. He's in serious danger of losing his job at Valencia after another defeat. But first, on Sunday night, it was Marseille versus Paris Saint-Germain. They call it Le Classique.
This is Football in Europe, Liga Roundup.
Okay, joining us now on Football in Europe is beIN Sport and ESPN French football journalist Jonathan Johnson. Thanks for coming back on the show, Jonathan. Really appreciate it.
Oh, thanks for having me on.
Okay, Le Classique. Paris Saint-Germain with a 2-1 victory against Marseille. I saw a fair amount of the game. Do you think Marseille were slightly hard done by to lose the game?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I thought Marseille were the better side over the 90 minutes. I think, unfortunately for them, though, you know, they just made... There's one mistake made for the early goal, and then a misjudgment from Steve Mondanda, you know, and that created PSG's two goals, really. I do think that both sides had other chances that they probably should have taken. You know, Di Maria missed a great chance in the first half. Lucas as well should have done better with one of his. But at the same time, Berarda had a great opportunity for Marseille. So I think that both sides should have scored more. The two decisive goals came about from Marseille, pretty much Marseille's two only mistakes. So, yeah, I do think it was a harsh scoreline on them, and I think they would have deserved at least a draw.
Marseille were without the returning Florian Thauvin, who's come back on loan from Newcastle. He was suspended after being sent off on his return to the club last week. But Remy Cabella, he scored a pretty good goal to make it 1-1, even though you might argue Kevin Trapp was at fault.
I wouldn't argue that Trapp was at fault, actually. I think when you look at the goal in real time, yes, it does look like it's a mistake by him. But when you see the replay, I think when you consider how late David Luiz left it to sort of, open his legs and let the ball go through, I actually think that, you know, Luiz probably deceived Trapp and made it more difficult for him to make the save. But no, regardless of that, it was a very good goal by Remy Cabella, you know, a lot of dribbling, got himself to the outside of the area, excellent shot into a position where it was going to be difficult for Trapp to make a save, even if his vision wasn't obscured by Luiz. And Cabella's, you know, started to really pick up for Marseille in recent weeks. There's rumours as well that they've already exercised the buyout clause, so we could see him making a permanent move to Marseille come the end of the season. But I think there's going to be plenty of movement at Stade Vélodrome over the summer.
I mean, you said that you didn't feel Trapp was too much at fault for the goal, which he got a hand to. But in general, there has been a fair amount of criticism for Kevin Trapp, particularly when they've got Sirigu on the bench.
It's a very difficult subject to broach in Paris. Plenty of people have their opinions about who should be number one, who shouldn't be number one. But Laurent Blanc is adamant Kevin Trapp is his number one goalkeeper. I can see why he likes him. You know, he's very good in the air normally. He's also good with the ball at his feet. Two things that Sirigu is not entirely convincing at. Sirigu is still a fine goalkeeper, don't get me wrong. We're looking back to last season. You know, I can also remember exactly why many people were speculating over Sirigu's future and why Blanc would have been wanting a bit more from him. So, you know, I think, in my opinion, that, you know, Kevin Trapp is a worthy number one for PSG, or he's potentially a worthy number one for PSG. But there is no escaping the fact that he has made, a few alarming errors at times over the season, particularly the error that he made away at Real Madrid in the Champions League. Edinson Cavani missed a great chance in that game and, you know, should shoulder as much blame as Trapp for PSG not at least getting a point there. But, you know, at the end of the day, that was, the costly mistake, and PSG finished second in their Champions League group because of that.
Onto the fixture itself, Le Classique. Why is this such a special fixture in the French football calendar?
You know, the rivalry has really intensified over the years. It never started out actually as a really fierce rivalry. It sort of took until the 80s to really start forming into one of France's biggest games. But now it's the first match on the calendar that most football fans look for. The capital and the north part of France, against the south. The perceived importance of Paris when compared to some of the provinces, that sort of thing. So it builds up that sort of rivalry between the two parts of France, and it's also two of the country's most successful football teams as well. You've got to bear in mind that even though PSG now have a lot of money, have a lot of people wanting to follow the team within France, Marseille is still the most widely supported team across the country, with neutrals when it comes to picking one of those two sides for the match. I think many side with Marseille still. So it's a very important game for the French footballing calendar. But it has been made more important over the years because of what happens off the pitch between the two sets of fans. There really is now bad blood there between the two sets of supporters.
Yeah, we certainly saw that when things were being thrown at Angel Di Maria while he was taking a corner, but he wasn't hurt in that incident anyway. On the subject of Di Maria, Jonathan, it seems he is at peace with the idea that, and I saw an interview with him in the week, that his time at Manchester United was a failure. He seems open to talk about how he's moving on from that. His winner alone for the game was made by Ibrahimovic, but it was a wonderful finish from Di Maria to win it.
Yeah, it was. And, he's been absolutely phenomenal over the last couple of months. I think he's been good since he arrived in Paris, but probably since about November time, he's really stepped up. And, he is one of PSG's leading players at the moment, along with Ibrahimovic. There's such complicity between the two. It's really, impressive to see. It's really encouraging for PSG ahead of the latter stages of the Champions League, their game against Chelsea. You can tell that he's more happy now than he was when he was at Manchester United. He's really starting to show in the way that he's playing football. You know, he's providing goals, but he's also scoring them. And he's turning up in the big games as well. And I'm really excited to see what he does against Chelsea in a couple of weeks' time, because I think that's really going to be the perfect opportunity for him to stand up and deliver.
And of course, making his goal and scoring one himself was Zlatan Ibrahimovic, who continues to prove his importance. What are the French media saying about his next destination? Because his future seems very much still up in the air.
Yeah, his future is still undecided, but I think there is now a feeling in France, among the French press and among the supporters, that there is the possibility that Ibrahimovic could still stay on. It looks likely at the moment that regardless of what happens between now and the end of the season, that Edinson Cavani will now leave in the summer. If PSG are going into the summer facing the potential departure of Ibrahimovic and Cavani, they would have to start from scratch and rebuild that front line. Whereas I think at the moment, when you consider the form that Ibrahimovic is in, the numbers that he's putting up, mostly in domestic competitions at the moment, but if he can start, adding a couple more goals and assists in the Champions League, I think PSG have no option really but to at least try to persuade Ibrahimovic that his future lies in Paris still for at least another season. I do think that ultimately Ibrahimovic will end up in America. It sounds like he has his heart set on a move to join David Beckham in Miami when that project finally gets off the ground. So it wouldn't surprise me to see him perhaps sign another deal for one more season with PSG, perhaps with an option for a second one, and just sort of bide his time while that move comes to fruition.
Finally, mate, we didn't talk about Stephen Fletcher.
Well, what a shock, really. It's a complete, came completely out of the blue. I can't wait to see when he starts the game. Didn't really get to do much against PSG when he came on for the final 10 minutes or so. But I'm curious to see how he adapts. Obviously we've had a couple of British players here in Ligue 1 over the past couple of seasons, Joey Barton and Joe Cole. Joe Cole wasn't really very successful at all. Joey Barton was popular off the pitch. I wouldn't say that he was absolutely fantastic on it. Marseille didn't really have much to work with in the way of resources in the January transfer window. They did well to bring Thauvin back, and were left with little really in order to bring in a striker. So now that he's there, it'll be interesting to see what he offers, especially with Michy Batshuayi falling out of form a little bit. There could be a couple of opportunities for him if Michel wants to give the Belgian a rest. So, he'll have a chance to show what he can do over the coming weeks and months. I'm hesitant to say how much of a success he's going to be in Ligue 1 at the moment.
You're listening to Football in Europe.
And a big thanks to Jonathan for joining us on the podcast again. It's always great to get him on. Also worth noting, we didn't discuss it there, and we're going to hear his thoughts on the Champions League race in France for next season on next week's show. But Paris Saint-Germain fans also weren't able to attend the game at Marseille due to security concerns, something that we've seen for a lot of travelling fans in Ligue 1 this season. Chris Parrott's still alongside me on the podcast this week. Chris, I feel a bit bad because we seem to discuss Gary Neville every week in some relatively negative context, but when after 9 La Liga games you haven't picked up a single victory, perhaps it's understandable. And at the weekend things got even worse for him.
Yeah, they lost to lowly Real Betis. I say lowly because Valencia are rapidly becoming involved, probably in a relegation battle. He is a coach now, and you have to judge him as you judge every other coach. The simple fact is he took over, they were 4 points off the Champions League places. They're now 4 points off relegation. He's managed.
Sorry, say that again. They were 4 points off the Champions League.
Yep, and they're now 4 points off the relegation
wow.
places. Their next two league games,
I didn't know that,
are against two of the teams below them. They are huge, because if Valencia were to lose those two games, then they really would be in the mire. And we're talking about, I said on TalkSport on Friday, that if he'd taken over Granada or even Real Sociedad or someone like that, then okay, but he didn't. He took over at Valencia.
And massive club.
Massive football club. And it just, they're not playing well consistently.
Let's look at a couple of things then. Sid Lowe tweeted this. Real Betis have won twice at home all season against David Moyes' Sociedad and Gary Neville's Valencia. Betis with that 1-0 victory over Valencia at the weekend. And it came off the back of Gary Neville. And many people would have seen this. The 7-0 loss to Barcelona in the Copa del Rey. The Copa del Rey was that one shining light, and in that semi-final, I think semi-final, wasn't it? Semi-final first leg against Barca. Suarez ended up scoring four times. Canizares, a Valencia legend, the former goalkeeper, says that the club should sack him and that Neville should apologise to the fans. Will or would Peter Lim sack him? Because they're business partners, as we know.
And let's be honest, Gary Neville was always going to get a shot of coaching. So he didn't just get it because he and Peter Lim have links. But that was certainly a major factor in it, because it was an unusual appointment. The whole thing was not normal in football.
No, it was bizarre.
So that's exactly right. Will Peter Lim sack him? Because it's one of those. He's gone out. I was going to say out on a limb. Good Lord, that would have been awful. But he, he's stuck his neck out to appoint Gary Neville. And actually, Canizares, I think he also said that if he thinks he's still the right man for the job, then maybe he should go as well. So.
Canizares on the offensive anyway.
Canizares on the offensive. But, I mean, there's no point in Gary Neville stepping down because, well, things could get worse if he got them relegated, but he has to somehow salvage something soon because it's been a disaster.
And there was that picture of Valencia, the Valencia team bus, leaving the game with Neville in the front seat, not driving, as in the front seat, front seat at the back. And angry fans just showing them the middle finger. It's almost in unison. I mean, there's real fury around Valencia at the moment. And perhaps it is understandable. Rafa Benitez linked. It's a real mess, actually, at the top of Valencia. And I think that's what fans are concerned about. But Benitez going back to Valencia. Ironically, his last game as Real Madrid coach, I think, was at Valencia when he got all that love from the Valencia fans. Could you see him going back at some point?
Yeah, certainly at some stage. Whether it's under the current structure there, I don't know. Right. And I would say, in Gary Neville's defence, he took over a very, very difficult situation. You can't lay all of the blame on him.
Oh, no, I mean, my thing with Neville is that I think what Neville's good at, because I don't think he has presence, and I don't think he necessarily is the most motivational person in the world. Certainly doesn't give you that aura on TV. I think what he is good at is clear articulation of ideas and understanding of football. And I think when you suddenly are working through either a translator or in a second language, surely his one asset, that articulation, he loses.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know how he's communicating to that squad in any meaningful way.
I think he's admitted that, hasn't he? And said that half-time it is difficult to get his message across. But again, he knew all of those issues were going to be there.
I know.
And that's the odd thing, because he said that he turned down jobs. He may well turn out to be a brilliant coach. I hope he is. But to go to Spain first off was always surely going to be the very tough thing.
Okay, so let's move on from Gary Neville, and we'll keep across that, of course, on the show. Let's just walk through some of the other scoreline to the weekend in La Liga at the top of the table, because we don't have much time on this. Barcelona won 2-0 at Levante. Luis Suarez on the score sheet again after his four goals against Valencia. Second place, Atletico beat Eibar by 3-1.
They did, sorry, I pointed a pen at you. I saw a nice stat, equaled Barca's record of 28 matches unbeaten in a row.
Ah, sorry, okay, good. So they're in fine form at the moment, Luis Enrique's side. As I was saying, Atletico beat Eibar 3-1. Fernando Torres, despite being pretty out of favour there at the moment, scored his 100th goal for the Rojiblancos. And Real Madrid needed an absolute belt. I was watching this game on Sunday. Luka Modric lay on to beat Granada 2-1. They're 4 points off Barca at the moment, as Zinedine Zidane said. And I tell you what, Luka Modric was easily Real Madrid's best player. And I think even Jamie Carragher, he must have been watching, because he tweeted, you just forget how good he was in the Premier League.
Yeah, and how Real Madrid have missed him when he's been injured.
Absolutely.
And he's back for the, you know, you never know. They're probably not going to win the title, but the Champions League, if Luka Modric is firing, they have every chance.
Let's go through some of your headlines now. Both Bayern and Dortmund drop points. The first time that's happened in the same Bundesliga weekend this season. Credit to Archie Rintup for that one. Leverkusen restricted Bayern to one shot on target in a 0-0 draw. Dortmund, meanwhile, played out a goalless draw too at high-flying Hertha with Jose Mourinho in attendance. While Julian Draxler faced his former club Schalke as a Wolfsburg player, Schalke lost 3-0.
The Swiss Super League returned at the weekend, and it was normal service too. Basel beat Luzern 3-0. And they're now 12 points clear at the top after Grasshopper were held at Young Boys in Bern.
Victor Valdes made a costly mistake in only his second league appearance for Standard Liège in Belgium. The former Barcelona goalkeeper completely missed a cross, leading to a goal for St. Truiden, who walked away with a 2-1 win.
It was the big one in the Eredivisie. The Klassieker Ajax beat Feyenoord by 2-1 in Amsterdam. They had to come from behind though, but Richedly Bazour got the winner. What a player he is. Ajax remain 1 point behind the leaders PSV, who also won.
Okay, so those are your headlines. Next on the show, the story of an Irishman who led Barcelona to silverware. Not many football fans will have heard of Patrick O'Connell, but in the 1930s, he was one of Spanish football's best coaches. Having captained his country and Manchester United as a player, he eventually moved to Spain to manage several La Liga clubs, including Barcelona. But his body now lies in an unmarked grave in London, and a foundation has been set up to raise money to establish suitable memorials in London and Dublin for O'Connell. Recently, I caught up with fund representative Fergus O'Dowd to look at this amazing story, and we pick up the tale with Don Patricio as manager of Racing Santander.
Follow the Football in Europe account on Audioboom for the latest podcasts, interviews and special features.
He spent 5 seasons there. He won 5 regional titles. And Patrick was involved in the foundation of La Liga in 1928. From Racing Santander, Patrick went to Real Oviedo. And from there, Patrick went to Real Betis. They were a mid-table team at the time, the early 30s. Within a season, Patrick had won the second division championship. By season 34-35, Real Betis pipped Real Madrid by 1 point and won La Liga. That was the one and only time that Real Betis have ever won La Liga. And from there, FC Barcelona came calling for Patrick's services.
So given those dates, he was manager around the time of the Spanish Civil War breaking out in 1936.
Patrick was actually holidaying in Belfast when he received a telegram to say, look, we understand if you don't want to come back. But he did actually come back. So the club basically faced financial ruin. Now, during that period, they played for a trophy called Mediterranean League, which Barcelona see as a La Liga title. Patrick actually won. Patrick and the team got an offer from a Mexican businessman to go on a tour to Mexico and the USA. So they set sail. It took 4 weeks. They had little or no food. They were absolutely starving by the time they got to Mexico. But they played a number of matches in Mexico, in New York, and they also went to Cuba. The tour was a complete success. They raised $12,900. Franco had frozen all the bank accounts in Barcelona. The monies were wired to an account in Paris. And these monies ultimately saved Barcelona Football Club from, you know, financial ruin, from extinction.
From what I've read about that trip, Ferguson, it seems many players in that Barcelona team used the fact that they were out of the country, out of Spain, to flee.
Most of the team actually absconded following the tour, and only 4 players actually returned with Patrick. Patrick actually rebuilt the team, and they played in a small competition called La Liga Catalan, which they won. He was eventually forced out of Barcelona. He went back to London. He returned then to Spain. We believe he got a pardon. His second wife was nanny to the King of Spain, so we believe he got a pardon. Franco was quite a big football fan, and so we believe he was allowed back into the country. He became manager of Real Betis again, the only Irishman to win the La Liga title, second division and tour division.
What's really confusing about this story for many people who will hear it and hear about a man who captained Manchester United and managed Barcelona is that he ended up with nothing.
He hadn't made much money out of the game, and he returned to London in the 50s. He ended up living with his brother close to St. Pancras railway station. His brother had found him an attic in a boarding house in London. He basically spent his time drawing national assistance, begging on the streets of London, and he was found dead in the attic from pneumonia at the age of 71 in 1959.
And as your website and your project explains, there is Patrick's unmarked grave in London, and it just seems for a man who lived such a full and exciting life, it's hard to believe that, you know, it would end like this.
Just as a football fan and somebody from Dublin, I thought it was, you know, an insult to the man's memory. Myself, my colleague Alan McLean from Banbridge in County Down, and Simon Needham, who's from Leeds in Yorkshire, excited that we'd raised the funds to restore Patrick's grave in Kensal Green, and also, you know, possibly to raise awareness of this amazing story and his football achievements, because he's definitely a forgotten man. And we're delighted to say that we've now raised the funds and Patrick's grave will be restored with a proper memorial in Kensal Green on the 28th of April.
I suppose the help of Barcelona, the club themselves, has helped as well, Fergus, because the recent game against Real Betis at home a few weeks ago, Patrick was honoured ahead of kickoff, a game involving two clubs that he managed.
He actually came on board in February last year. Patrick was honoured about 45 minutes prior to the FC Barcelona Real Betis game by the president of the club, Jose Maria Bartomeu, which was unbelievable. Patrick's cap was also on display. So that was, I think it was quite appropriate, because obviously this is Patrick's 80th anniversary of becoming FC Barcelona manager. Just incredible what the man achieved in football. I think he's the greatest Irish club football manager there has ever been. There's not been any other Irishman ever involved at Barcelona Football Club, never mind winning a Liga title or captain Manchester United, captain his country. I don't think he can do much more to be a legend, but sadly, Patrick, he should be a legend. He should be there with the likes of Johnny Carey, John Giles, George Best, Norman Whiteside, Liam Brady, Paul McGrath, but unfortunately, he's not. And part of the project is to raise awareness and people read about this amazing man and this amazing story.
For more, head to the website footballineurope.co.uk.
And a big thanks to Fergus O'Dowd for appearing on the podcast. To find out more about Don Patricio himself, head to www. Do you have to do the www?
Not anymore? Sure, although it might help, because if you just went pocfund.com, people might be like, hang on.
Too aggressive. www.pocfund.com. Okay, Chris, we're going to finish with some Serie A chat. Roma have won three in a row under Luciano Spalletti after they beat Sampdoria 2-1 at the weekend. Miserable time for Sampdoria at the moment with their head coach Vincenzo Montella, former Roma player. Inter came from 3-1 down to draw at bottom club Hellas Verona 3-3. And a dodgy result for Inter there, given that they're one of those teams with Roma fighting for a Champions League spot.
Yeah, exactly. And Fiorentina have also been stuttering under Paolo Sosa. They drew 1-1 at Bologna. And for a long time, it looked between Inter and Fiorentina, in all honesty. But they have dropped points, and Roma under Spalletti now are right on the coattails of third place Fiorentina and fourth place Inter in that. The championship battle is brilliant. We'll get onto that now. But the battle for third and the final Champions League place might just be just as compelling.
Stefan El Shaarawy, by the way, has scored 2 goals in 3 games since joining Roma at the end of the transfer window. To the top of the table, Napoli won again. Gonzalo Higuain with his 24th Serie A goal of the season, a penalty in a 1-0 success over Carpi. And Juve won as well in second. Cuadrado and Dybala getting on the score sheet in that game, a 2-0 success over Frosinone. A game you'd expect them to win. And Napoli and Juve are well clear of the rest now at the moment, Chris. And the two sides meet in Turin next week.
You mentioned it there. 8 wins in a row for Napoli, club record. Nowhere near Juve's current run of 14, though. I mean, they've been outrageously good. Higuain is 11 clear of anybody else in the goal-scoring charts. I mean, you're talking fascinating to see what happens with him in the summer. Although, why would you want to leave Napoli? They're going to be in the Champions League and they might be the Italian champions. Dybala scoring goals for fun. Whoever plays better out of those two might just have it. It's in Turin. Juve are brilliant at home. But if Napoli won, they'd be 5 points clear. This is a team that have won the Scudetto twice in their history. And they have such a good opportunity to make it 3 under Sarri. I mean, what a dream debut season that would be.
And two Argentines getting the goals in Dybala and Higuain. That league's seen great Argentine strikers down the years, isn't it? In Maradona and Batistuta come to mind immediately. Max Allegri linked with the Premier League and with Chelsea, the Chelsea job in the summer. We won't get into that now because there's a couple of injuries for Juve. I heard Cáceres is injured.
Chiellini and Mandzukic as well. It's going to be great.
But Mandzukic is not too much of a concern, is he? I mean, Chiellini's a much bigger blow if he's not playing.
Yeah, if Chiellini isn't there, I mean, he's been there forever, hasn't he? But he's such a vital component of that Juve side. Hope that Napoli go for it. They've been so fun to watch all season. But then when you're 2 points clear away at your nearest challenger, do you
change?
A draw's a great result for them. Mm. it looked for so long, didn't it? It was anyone's title, and Fiorentina led the table and Inter led the table, and Roma messed up after that dreadful start, and ultimately Garcia lost his job. But it's really come down to two now.
And there was also that story with Koulibaly, who received racist abuse. The Napoli player received racist abuse during a Lazio game from the Lazio fans, and the Napoli fans did something to show their support for their own player.
Yeah, they all wore masks with his face on and said, we are all Koulibaly. Yeah, very unsavoury incident in the game between Lazio and Napoli last midweek. It was suspended, could easily have been called off. Wasn't in the end, but good to see that.
It was stopped, wasn't it, for a few minutes or something?
About 3 minutes, I think, and then they had a discussion, and it could easily have been abandoned.
Chris, I think we're done, are we?
We are.
Just looking at the script.
We probably missed something huge.
Dan Petrescu.
Gary Neville. Have we discussed Gary Neville?
Canizares aftershave.
Actually, yes, we have, because we spoke about China for ages, and we didn't wish everyone a happy Chinese New Year.
Okay, so we wish everyone a happy Chinese New Year.
And that one story in the German Bundesliga with the Liverpool fans walking out of Anfield about ticket prices.
Yeah.
It's a Europe-wide issue. And Dortmund have come out in support of their own supporters. They're going away to Stuttgart. 25% of their allocation at Stuttgart was going to be €70, apparently. So a Dortmund fans group said, we're not going. Club spokesman Sasser Flieger has said, VfB Stuttgart have offered us very high ticket prices, which we've officially complained about. Interesting to see what happens there, but it just goes to show it isn't just an English problem. Or issue.
Even in the Bundesliga, where everyone thinks it's...
Exactly. And I think, it happened with Bayern in the Champions League at Arsenal as well, didn't it?
Yeah, they were unhappy with Arsenal's pricing.
I think
that.
I'm totally with the away fans in this country. 30 quid is enough.
Surely. Okay, so that's all we've got time for. Maybe we'll talk about that more on a future show. Don't forget to leave us a review on iTunes. And if you have enjoyed the show as well, please tweet about it using @FIEPodcast. We're back next Monday.
This is Football in Europe.